Stay tuned for Africa News Tonight, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Francis Alonso reporting. Pope Francis has arrived in Kenya at the start of a tour of Africa that also includes stops in Uganda and the Central African Republic. As we hear here, he was greeted at the airport with well-wishers singing and dancing and holding signs welcoming him to the country. His schedule in Nairobi Wednesday includes meetings with President Uhuru Kenyatta and a group of diplomats at the State House. On Thursday, he is to hold an interfaith meeting at the Vatican's diplomatic mission in the Kenyan capital. Later in the day, he will conduct mass at the University of Nairobi. Correspondent Jill Craig is in the Kenyan capital and says security for the Pope's visit is high.
The reports that we got from the Kenyan police chief was that 10,000 additional police had been brought in for this event. And you can notice that you see it as well around. I mean, normally at a traffic roundabout, you'd have probably four policemen, sort of directing traffic. And now you've got double that, plus more police along the route. And then also many of the streets are closed down entirely based on wherever the Pope is going. So I would say that that the Kenyan security forces say that they've got things under control.
During the Pope's trip, the pontiff is expected to highlight the effects of climate change, having previously said the underprivileged are disproportionately affected by changes in weather patterns. The United Nations welcomed a peace agreement signed by two tribes in southern Libya and reiterated calls for the approval of a national pact to end more than a year of political crisis in the country. Qatar brokered the deal between the Tuareg and Tibu tribes in the town of Ubari, and it also calls for the return of displaced people. VOA News. Tunisian President Beji Caidi Sebi has urged his citizen to respect a curfew and other precautions that have been implemented following Tuesday's bus explosion that killed at least 12 people in the capital of Tunis. Usebi said in an emergency national security meeting Wednesday that the only thing that should be on the minds of Tunisians is that the country is in danger. He said all of the current precautions are part of the broader fight against terrorism. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry has warned that ongoing Israeli-Palestinian violence could spin out of control. He made the statement after a diplomatic trip to the region where he met with leaders from both sides. Kerry said Wednesday after flying to Boston that the U.S. has been encouraging Israel and the Palestinians to take steps to reduce tensions and demonstrate a true commitment to the two-state solution. Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov said Wednesday that Turkey's downing of a Russian warplane looks like a planned provocation, but that Russia is not going to war with Turkey. Lavrov said the incident will make Russia reconsider its relationship with Turkey. He canceled a planned trip to Turkey Wednesday, but did speak with Turkey's foreign minister, and the two agreed to meet in the coming days. This is the Turkish Prime Minister Ahmet Davutoğlu. He's speaking to lawmakers. He says Turkey has no intention of straining of ties with its friend and neighbor Russia. Meanwhile, President Recep Tayyip Erdogan says his country was simply defending itself when Turkish fighter jets shot down a Russian jet and that he does not want any escalation with Russia. This year will be the hottest on record, and 2016 could be hotter due to the El Nino weather pattern, according to the World Meteorological Organization Wednesday, warning that inaction on climate change could see temperatures rise by 6 degrees Celsius or more. However, decisions taken at a summit of world leaders in Paris starting on Monday could keep global temperature rises within 2 degrees Celsius over pre-industrial times, a target set down in 2010 to try to prevent dangerous climate change. This is Omar Badur, a climate expert at the World Meteorological Organization.
If we look at the previous year, 2014, which was last year the warmest on record, it was not an El Niño year. And this year is not actually the full El Niño year. It's still starting and it will pick up next year. So what we can expect roughly is that next year will be warmer than this year because of the effect of El Niño.
Again, you could read more details on that and more 24 hours a day at voanews.com. I'm Frances Alonso in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
and welcome to African News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehiz Wuhib, and coming up at this hour on African News Tonight.
The director of one of the few remaining independent newspapers in Burundi is being charged with conspiring with the leaders of a failed coup. And Pope Francis arrives in Kenya for the first stop of his three-nation tour.
We'll have these stories, plus the sunny side of sports with Sunny Young, music from Somalia, and our daily features. So stay with us. There's lots more ahead on African News Tonight.
Our top story this hour, Pope Francis has arrived in Kenya for the first stop of his three-nation tour. He's also scheduled to visit Uganda and the Central African Republic. VOA correspondent Jill Craig was on hand in Nairobi when the Pope arrived. She spoke to Joe DiCapua about what she saw.
Probably thousands of Kenyans who had lined the route from the airport to State House, where the Pope was headed to after he landed. People were very, very excited. I mean, even non-Catholics, non-Christians, very excited the Pope had chosen Kenya as the first stop on his first Africa tour. You know, there were people dancing, there were people singing Catholic worship songs. Traffic was completely stopped, so people were standing on top of minibuses, sort of standing on top of the motorbikes, hoping to get a glimpse of the Pope as he came by. So I can tell you the mood was very, very festive. The other thing I noticed was that each time a car would come by, for example, when the police motorcade or when even an ambulance or a police car would drive by, people were cheering, you know, I think just sort of thinking, oh, the Pope is coming next. So I can say that everyone was very excited. And when the Pope did roll by, you know, he was waving and people were just very, very jubilant. So I can say that Kenyans are pretty excited about this visit.
What are the main issues that the Pope is expected to discuss?
Many of the same issues that he did in D.C., although I will say that there's a few other ones for Kenya. He's expected to address climate change, which, as you know, he mentioned several times on his U.S. tour, and so he will be stopping by the United Nations Environment Program tomorrow, actually, to talk with officials there. So climate change is one issue. He's going to be talking with a group of interreligious leaders as well. So we've got Muslims, Buddhists, Hindus, Jews, and Protestants, as well as Catholics, will be meeting with him tomorrow. And then also he's got a stop scheduled in the Kangeni slum on Friday morning. And that one I think is particularly poignant here because the Pope has made his humility such a founding part of his papacy. And, you know, I think that the way that he has sort of lived a more humble lifestyle really appeals to a lot of people here who are experiencing poverty firsthand. So the fact that he's going to a slum with, I think it's an estimated 200,000 people live in Kangeni in a very crowded, congested, smaller space, relatively speaking. You know, that means a lot to people there. And when I spoke with some of them the other day, the funny thing is when you ask them, how is the Pope doing, instead of talking about the bigger issues of what he's done, you know, a lot of people mention that they're thankful because the government has come in and paved the roads and their security is better because of the immediate impact from the Pope coming. So I think that there's a lot of reasons why people are excited about him coming.
That was VOA's Jill Craig speaking from Nairobi to VOA's Joe DiCapua.
Pope Francis is scheduled to arrive in the Central African Republic Sunday, the final stop on his Africa tour. The country has been in chaos since a rebel coup in 2013 that led to bloody intercommunal violence pitting Muslims against Christians. Many hope the Pope can bring peace to the country. VOA's Chris Stein reports from Bangui.
The call to prayer rings out from a mosque in Bangui's PK5 neighborhood. The sound is rarely heard in the capital these days. Most of Bangui's mosques were destroyed in sectarian violence that erupted in December 2013 and continues to simmer even now. Pope Francis is expected to visit this mosque, a perhaps risky venture. Anti-Muslim militia groups, known as the Anti-Balaka, surround the neighborhood, stationed at the entrances and exits with guns and grenades. Inside PK5 are members of the former Seleka rebel group, which took control of the country in March 2013, only to lose power the following year as the country descended into chaos. The conflict has killed thousands and displaced nearly a million more. Most of the country's Muslim minority fled to neighboring countries amid mob violence, held responsible for abuses by the mostly Muslim Seleka rebels. PK5 is now the last place in the capital where Muslims can live, but they live under siege. Umar Kobin Layama is a prominent imam in the capital who has worked alongside Christian leaders for reconciliation.
Some optimists pour que cette visite puisse apporter un grand changement dans le cœur.
He says he is optimistic that the Pope's visit can change the mentality of the Central African people. He says he wants Muslims and Christians to be able to live together again, which will lead to the development of the country. Across town, Bangui's Cathedral is getting a new coat of paint, under the watchful eye of United Nations peacekeepers and local police. The Pope is expected to administer reconciliation to young people here and hold a prayer vigil. Mary Albertine Ndoitua, a rural development worker, just attended an outdoor prayer service. People are expecting peace, she says. And if the Pope comes, she says she expects peace to come to the land. But others are not so sure. Student Constantine Nguinda says if everyone is united, then the situation can change. But it is not as simple as the Pope coming and then everyone deciding to live in peace. Stalled disarmament has undermined efforts to stabilize the country. Violence has flared sporadically in the capital ahead of much-delayed elections, now planned for December 27th. Bangui has been quiet in recent weeks, but the tension remains high. 22 people were killed in fighting in the countryside earlier this month. Chris Stein for VOA News, Bangui.
Thank you, Chris. In related news, the staff, faculty, and students at the Catholic University of South Sudan are closely following the Pope's historic visit. Father Matthew Pagan, vice chancellor of the university, says this is more than a visit. He says it could mark a new beginning for initiatives for goodness and peace for Africa and South Sudan in particular. He spoke with Ayen Bor of the South Sudan in Focus program.
You know, Pope Francis has been very strong on the issues of peace, and he has really talked hard about the question of violence. Violence as a violation of the dignity of human person created in the image of God, and how the people who are really committing violence are really working on the side of evil. They are not promoting anything of God and anything of human progress. He has been very strong on that, and the issues of violence. In one of the statements, says, violence disfigures the image of God in the human person. Yeah. So we are very happy that it's coming, and it's coming to really boost the initiative for peace, both in various places in East Africa, but in particular in our country, South Sudan.
What does the Pope and his leadership mean for a country like South Sudan?
Oh, it's a big sign of encouragement and hope. The presence of the Pope always brings us a renewed hope of that things can get better. You know, I compare it to a visit of John Paul II in Khartoum, when he came to Khartoum in 1993. You know, for us who were in Khartoum at the time, suffering from the war and all the problems we faced in Khartoum, the coming of the Pope was a new beginning. A new beginning for us in Khartoum, and from that time onward, things began to improve for us who lived the events in Khartoum at the time. This is our hope also, that the coming of the Pope will also mark a new beginning for the East African countries, for South Sudan in particular. That will mark a new beginning, it will mark a new boost for all the initiatives for goodness, initiatives for well-being. Now, in our countries, and initiatives for peace in our country, in particular South Sudan.
What do you think is the biggest lesson that the Pope can take from the people of South Sudan and from the history of South Sudan itself?
I think the biggest thing is really perseverance that the Pope can take from our people. If you see our history, the whole history of perseverance, since I don't know, you go back to how many years behind. Yeah. Perseverance and resilience. People suffer, but they are always patient, and the people who never lose hope that things can change better.
The Pope has faced criticism from many who think that he is too progressive and lenient on social issues like divorce and homosexuality. Do you worry that this will shadow his efforts to connect with the African people, in particular South Sudanese?
I think the most important issue now with us is the question of the family that has displaced children, that has got children dying from war, that has got people dying from sicknesses. I think that is not the real message. The real message is the human person born in the family, and the children, the women, all these people who are suffering. I think that's what he will focus, the refugees who are in the camps, the people who are dying of hunger, the people who are sick in hospitals and they don't have medicine, the people who are in displaced camps and they don't have medical attention. I think these are like the issues really the Pope will focus on.
That was Father Matthew Pagan, Vice Chancellor of the Catholic University of South Sudan. He spoke with South Sudan in Focus reporter Ayan Bior.
Police in Europe have been on high alert since the Paris terrorist attacks, but some worry that austerity cuts following the Great Recession may have affected security. Since the attacks, a number of governments have announced new spending plans for intelligence and counterterrorism programs. One analyst says a massive realization hit Europe following the Paris attacks. France currently has 250,000 police officers, but that figure represents a cut of 13,000 that occurred under the previous governments. In Belgium, where security forces continue to hunt suspects from the Paris attacks, officials have decided not to reduce the number of police officers. Italy, Spain, and England have reduced the number of police officers in recent years.
The Canadian government says it will settle about 25,000 Syrian refugees from Middle Eastern camps within the next 3 months. Newly elected Liberal Prime Minister Justin Trudeau has pledged to settle the first 10,000 by the end of December. However, he's being urged to extend the deadline given security issues after the attacks in Paris. With the help of the UN Refugee Agency, the Canadian government plan is to conduct security checks in Jordan, Lebanon, and Turkey. More than 4 million have fled Syria since the start of the conflict in 2011. Most of the migrants and refugees flooding into Europe are Syrians. EU Commission President Jean-Claude Juncker says Europe must not confuse extremists who have attacked Paris with the more than 700,000 migrants and refugees who have come to Europe this year. Juncker favors settlement of asylum seekers for compassionate reasons. He also says there are economic reasons. The entry of thousands of people has damaged free passage of citizens between EU states. But the EU president says without those freedoms of movement, the EU's single currency system will make no sense. U.S. Vice President Joe Biden is attending a summit of southeastern EU countries today in Zagreb, Croatia. The refugee flows, now up to 5,000 per day, have created tension and occasional violence in Greece, Macedonia, Serbia, Croatia, and Slovenia in recent weeks. In related news, at least 18 migrants died in a refugee camp in Algeria yesterday. More than 37 others were injured as a fire broke out in the camp in southern Algeria. The cause of the fire has not been determined. Many in the camp have fled from poverty and terrorist threats in Mali and Niger. You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580, and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Yehiz Wuhid, 19 past the hour. Here's a recap of our top stories. Pope Francis has arrived in Kenya for the first stop of his three-nation tour. He is also scheduled to visit Uganda and the Central African Republic. And the Canadian government says it will settle about 25,000 Syrian refugees from Middle Eastern camps within the next 3 months. And we'd like to hear your thoughts on our stories. You can write to us at Africa News Tonight, Voice of America, 330 Independence Avenue, Southwest Washington, D.C., 20237. And for listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC. For all other listeners, please stay tuned to Africa News Tonight for the latest sports features and more coming up next right here on The Voice of America. For the full hour of Africa News Tonight, tune in again at 1800 UTC.
The director of one of the few remaining independent newspapers in Burundi is being charged with conspiring with the leaders of a failed coup. Antoine Kabarare is alleged to have talked on the telephone with General Cyril Ndeyurikiye a day before the general allegedly attempted to overthrow the government of President Pierre Nkurunziza last May. The general has been arrested, but others involved in the coup remain at large. Most of Burundi's independent journalists have fled the country since violence erupted in May. Street protests and clashes between political opponents, civil society groups, police, and ruling party youth members have left more than 240 dead. The UN says more than 200,000 people have fled the country. The political crisis began when President Nkurunziza chose to run for a third term as president, despite local and international donor opposition. They called the move unconstitutional.
The Islamic State today claims responsibility for an attack on a bus carrying Tunisian presidential guards on Tuesday. The explosion killed 13 passengers. The Islamic State claimed on their internet posting today that they killed 30 passengers. President Beji Said Essebsi is holding an emergency meeting of his cabinet today. He also has declared a 30-day national state of emergency and a curfew in the capital, Tunis. The bus was traveling through central Tunis when the explosion occurred. Speaking on national television yesterday night, he said Tunisia is at war against terrorism and urged international cooperation against extremists who have staged several deadly attacks in recent weeks. The explosion came 10 days after authorities increased security in Tunis and deployed security forces in high numbers. Earlier this month, Tunisian authorities announced the dismantling of a cell it said had planned attacks on police stations and hotels in the seaside city of Soucy, about 150 kilometers southeast of Tunis. Tunisia's tourism industry has been hit hard this year following extremist attacks. Shootings at a luxury beach hotel in Soucy last June killed 38 people, mostly tourists. In March, an attack by Islamist extremists at Tunisia's famed Bardo Museum near the capital killed 22 people.
Well, treatment for HIV/AIDS is much more readily available in Africa now than it was a decade ago. Life expectancy has increased. But as we hear from health reporter Art Chimes, a new study finds that women are gaining more than men.
A new long-term study in South Africa has looked at the results of effective treatment for HIV/AIDS called antiretroviral therapy, or ART, which became widely available in 2004. Jacob Bohr of the Boston University School of Public Health and his colleagues analyzed data collected in South Africa's KwaZulu-Natal province between 2001 and 2011. He says the scale-up of ART dramatically transformed people's lives. Death rates on the whole decreased, and people were living longer.
On the other hand, men seem to be benefiting less at the population level than women.
For example, in fewer than a dozen years, the life expectancy for women increased by more than 13 years, but men gained only 9 years of life expectancy. Why is that? Bohr says more than half the men who died of HIV/AIDS never sought treatment, even though free treatment was widely available. This suggests, he says, that better ways are needed to persuade men to get tested and treated.
Often when a man goes to a clinic, he's sitting in a room with dozens of women and is the only man there. And that can be an uncomfortable experience. And so male clinics are one idea that people have thought about.
Another approach, he says, is self-testing, where men can find out their HIV status in private. Also, Bohr points out that because a clinic doesn't charge a patient doesn't mean that the testing is really free. There are costs, like transportation or missing work, that also may deter men from getting tested and treated for HIV/AIDS. The research paper by Jacob Bohr and his colleagues is published in the journal PLOS Medicine. For VOA News, this is Art Chimes reporting.
Thank you, Art. Well, Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov said today that Turkey's downing of a Russian warplane looks like a planned provocation, but that Russia is not going to war with Turkey. Lavrov said the incident will make Russia reconsider its relationship with Turkey. He canceled a planned trip to Turkey today, but did speak with Turkey's foreign minister, and the two agreed to meet in the coming days. Separately, Russia's foreign ministry said in a statement today that Lavrov told Turkish Foreign Minister Mevlüt Çavuşoğlu in a phone call that in shooting down the Russian jet, Turkey's leadership has, in essence, sided with the Islamic State group. Meanwhile, one of the pilots who parachuted from the Su-24 arrived today at a Russian base in Latakia after being rescued by members of the Syrian army. Speaking to reporters there, he denied that the jet had entered Turkey's airspace even for a second and insisted that the Turkish authorities had issued no warnings whatsoever to the plane before it was shot down. Also speaking today at an event in Istanbul, Turkey, the president said the plane crashed in Syria but was still inside Turkey's airspace when it was hit on Tuesday.
This is Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhi with Kim Lewis in Washington. It's 27 minutes past the hour. And for listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC. For all other listeners, please stay tuned to Africa News Tonight for the latest sports features and more coming up next right here on The Voice of America. For the full hour of Africa News Tonight, tune in again at 1800 UTC.
Next on Straight Talk Africa, Pope Francis travels to Africa, making his first trip to the continent. The pontiff will visit Kenya, Uganda, and the Central African Republic in a pilgrimage that will bring him face to face with Islamic extremism and Christian-Muslim violence. Join host Shaka Sali and his guests as they discuss the significance of the Pope's mission next Wednesday at 18:30 UTC on VOA Africa.
Feast with your ears on Music Time in Africa, your connection to the best Pan-African music. Hello, this is Heather Maxwell inviting you to join me every Saturday and Sunday at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
This one, this one,
every show brings you the best music from across the continent. Old songs you know and love, and new songs to discover. You'll meet artists too. Listen to Africa's superstars and rising stars in exclusive, unplugged interviews on the radio or on my YouTube channel. Search for Heather Maxwell, Music Time in Africa. We play only the best right here on VOA Africa.
Here's advice from the international medical group Doctors Without Borders, also known as MSF, to help limit the spread of the Ebola virus. First, do not touch or eat the bushmeat of animals from the forest. Avoid contact with blood, urine, feces, vomit, sweat, tears, saliva, mucus, or genital secretions of an Ebola patient. Do not handle the bodies of the patients who have died of Ebola. Inform the nearest health center of any suspected Ebola cases. Seek health care immediately, because infected people have a much higher survival rate if they receive early treatment at a health facility. compared to staying home. These are recommendations from the medical aid group Doctors Without Borders, or MSF, on how to prevent the spread of Ebola.
This is African News Tonight on the Voice of America. Here's a brief recap of our top stories this hour. Pope Francis has arrived in Kenya for the first stop of his three-nation tour. And the Canadian government says it will settle about 25,000 Syrian refugees from Middle Eastern camps within the next 3 months. And the director of one of the few remaining independent newspapers in Burundi is being charged with conspiring with the leaders of a failed coup. Coming up, we'll have music from Somalia. And in our feature segment, in Nigeria, helping girls without marketable skills. I'm Kim Lewis with Yeheya Swuhib, and we're live from Washington. This is Africa News Tonight on the VOA. Sports with Sunny is next. And, of course, it's time now for the Sunny Side of Sports with Sunny Young. And happy Wednesday, Sunny.
Happy Wednesday to you, Kim.
Well, Sunny, understand a baseball great tops your sports report today.
Kim, let's begin here in Washington, where President Obama has awarded the Presidential Medal of Freedom, the USA's highest civilian honor, to baseball great Willie Mays.
Willie also served our country. And his quiet example, while excelling on one of America's biggest stages, helped carry forward the banner of civil rights. A few years ago, Willie rode with me on Air Force One. I told him then what I'll tell all of you now. It's because of giants like Willie that someone like me could even think about running for president.
'84-year-old Willie Mays rose from his chair at the White House and took off his Giants baseball cap. And President Obama smiled as he put the Medal of Freedom ribbon around his neck. Mays was one of 17 people to receive the award. Willie is regarded as one of the greatest all-around baseball players of all time. Among his achievements, a 24-time All-Star. In the words of another All-Star, the late Ted Williams, they invented the All-Star game for Willie Mays. Willie was twice voted the National League's most valuable player, and his exceptional defensive skills were recognized 12 times with Major League Baseball's Gold Glove Award. Willie won his only World Series championship in 1954 with the New York Giants, who later moved west and became the San Francisco Giants. That World Series is perhaps best remembered by the catch, a spectacular over-the-shoulder running grab by Willie Mays in deep center field of the Polo Grounds off a long drive off the bat of Vic Wertz of the Cleveland Indians. The catch is considered the iconic image of Willie Mays' playing career and one of baseball's most memorable fielding plays.
Hello, Africa. Dr. Larry Zamoje here, Chairman, Chief Executive, Sports Radio 88.9 Brilla FM. Keep getting sporty sunshine with Sunny Young. We all do at Sports Radio 88.9 Brilla FM, broadcasting out of the cities of Lagos, Abuja, Kaduna, and Onitsha in Nigeria, as well as the World Wide Web on www.brillafm.net. I tell you this. It's always a thrill, yes, a thrill, to remain on the sunny side on Brilla with Sunny. Keep listening, Africa.
Keep on the sunny side, always on the sunny side. Keep on the sunny side of life. It will help us every day. It will brighten all the way. It will keep on the sunny side of life.
I'm Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
America.
Argentina and Barcelona football star Lionel Messi says it's good to be back on the pitch after making a triumphant return in UEFA Champions League action Tuesday. In his first start following 2 months out with a knee injury, Messi was his dynamic self right from the start, scoring two goals with an assist and even getting booked late in the match for a sliding foul in Barcelona's 6-1 rout of visiting Roma. Barca's big win puts the defending champions into the knockout round for a 12th consecutive season. Speaking after the match, Messi said, and I quote, "It's tough to get back up to full speed. I prepared well and trained, but it's not the same as going out on the pitch and lasting 90 minutes. I'll take it with calm and get my pace back." Sounds like he's already got his pace back. In other UEFA Champions League results Tuesday, Bayern defeated second-place Olympiacos 4-0 to clinch first place in Group F. Arsenal beat Dynamo Zagreb 3-0. The Gunners of Arsenal can still advance next month by winning at Olympiacos 2-0 or by a one-goal margin of at least 3-2 because of the head-to-head formula used to separate clubs. The Blues of Chelsea defeated 10-man Maccabi Tel Aviv 4-0 in Group G, and Zenit St. Petersburg secured the top spot in Group H with a 2-0 win over Valencia. In pro boxing, I've been talking with Namdi Hollywood Moueta about Mexican star Canelo, who captured the WBC middleweight title over the weekend with a unanimous decision victory over Puerto Rico's Miguel Cotto in Las Vegas, Nevada. I asked Namdi about the pay-per-view numbers for Canelo Cotto.
Well, the first projection that came out, 900,000 plus, which means Canelo Cotto will bring in a million plus. And when he times 60, that fight is going to bring in a lot of money.
Namdi, future opponents for Canelo. There was talk by his promoter, Oscar De La Hoya, after the fight that he hasn't ruled out a rematch against Floyd Mayweather. What do you think about that?
Wishful thinking. Everybody wants to fight Mayweather. Even the guy down the street wants Mayweather because he knows he'll be banking, you know.
So you don't see that happening?
No, Floyd is a very shrewd businessman. Don't be surprised we'll see Manny Pacquiao against Floyd Mayweather too. I mean, the whole world is they're screaming now, we don't want it, we got ripped off. But once the fight is made, people will come out and they're going to clean up again and make the first fight made more than $500 million, you know. So do we want to see the Mayweather-Pacman too? Definitely.
Namdi, it's now been more than 2 years since Canelo fought Mayweather. That bout was on September 14th, 2013. Since then, Canelo has beaten four consecutive opponents. Do you think he's improved since he fought Mayweather?
Oh, yes. The Canelo Saturday night was a totally different Canelo. The Canelo that fought Mayweather was totally confused. He didn't know what to do. He didn't know how to adjust, you know. But the Canelo Saturday night against Cotto, he was able to dominate the fight, and he was the ring general. He was able to run his combination. He was able to, like, go to the body. I think in the game now, Canelo has the best left hook to the body. I will call him a body snatcher.
And what about his head movement, Namdi? I've heard good things about that, too.
Great head movement. He reminds me of a Philadelphia fighter, a black fighter from Philadelphia, the way he moves, the way he comes at you. That's what the fans love. And he's going to be a global star because, you know, the door is open now. The two guys, they're almost on their way out. Maybe they have one more fight, Floyd and Manny Pacquiao. But this is the new sheriff in town, and he comes to fight.
This new sheriff, natural middleweight. Getting back to Mayweather, would he go up in weight to take on Canelo again?
No. Mayweather is a natural 147-pound, a natural welterweight. He already beat Canelo easy the first time. The fight fans will not really jump on it. Floyd is a very slick fighter. He can take Canelo back to school again the second time. You
know? So at this point, you think Triple G is more likely to take on Canelo?
Oh, yeah. Triple G is a fight everybody wants to see happen. That will happen, but they need to let it marinate, like we say in boxing, for a little while, because put them both on the same card, like the Dallas Cowboys Stadium, LA Coliseum, the Mexicans will tear down the place, you know. And then we look for September, you know, because the big date now, Canelo is going to have two fights in 2016, and that's going to be May and then in September, because that was Floyd Mayweather pay-per-view date. Now, the Mexican champion, who is on his way of becoming a global champion, will take those two dates, September and May.
Namdi, how about Miguel Cotto? Great boxing career. This was his fifth loss against 40 wins. What's next for Cotto, or do you see him retiring?
I don't think he should retire. I mean, Cotto's had some brutal fights, great wars in the gym, but he has nothing to be ashamed of. He has maybe one or two fights. But mind you, he signed with Jay-Z, and we brought up Jay-Z last Friday, but the fight fans don't understand in Africa. So what's up with Jay-Z? Okay, Jay-Z is his promoter. Jay-Z is the owner of the company, Rock Nation Sports. But Jay-Z did not do any heavy lifting for this fight, you know, so Jay-Z definitely dropped the ball, you know. So Jay-Z gave him a lot of money to sign him. So Jay-Z will at least get at least two more fights out of Cotto. And there are a couple of middleweights there that Cotto can beat easily.
You were there for the undercard too, Namdi. Any fighters that caught your eye that maybe we should look out for in 2016?
The Moura fight with Gonzalez from Mexico and Japan, it was a great fight. And the Mexican fighter came from behind and then knocked out the Japanese man, and which was like a setup for the big fight for us with Canelo Cotto. Yeah, we came there for Canelo Cotto. So any other thing was just a side dish, so we don't pay much attention to that.
On a sad note, Namdi, the boxing world is now mourning the loss of Bob Foster, who died at the age of 76. Your thoughts on Bob Foster?
Bob Foster, we will always remember, the first man to knock down the late Dick Tiger of Nigeria, the fourth round, devastating puncher. He dominated the light heavyweight division, and he moved up to the heavyweight. He did not take his power upstairs, like we normally say. He got knocked out by Joe Frazier and by Muhammad Ali. He's one man that we will always remember that he brought his power with him into the division and cleaned out the light heavyweight division. We will miss Bob Foster.
And finally, Namdi, do you see any parallels between Foster and Latif Power Coyote? In other words, not being able to bring that power up to the heavyweight division.
Yes, good question, Sonny, because not every time when you move upstairs, you can take your power upstairs. You know, you leave it behind and you cannot tangle with the big boys, you know. So that's what happened with Bob Foster, and that's what's going on with Agbara Power Coyote.
All right, rest in peace, Bob Foster.
All right, my man.
Thanks, Namdi. That's our reigning prince of pugilistics, Namdi Hollywood Moeta. This VOA programming note, Douglas the Mighty Mpuga will be covering for me on the Sports Beat on Thursday and Friday as I take a short Thanksgiving break. I'll be back behind our Voice of America microphone on Monday, November 30th. Thanks for letting me share. I'm VOA Sonny Young, and that's the sunny side of sports. Back to Yeheyas Wuhib and Kim Lewis.
Thank you, Sonny. And listen to the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 1631 UTC and 1831 UTC. And on Fridays, Sonny has an expanded half-hour edition of the sunny side of sports at 1730 hours UTC. Right here on the Voice of America.
Coming up in Nigeria, helping girls without marketable skills. And next, we profile two distinguished Americans who made their mark in World War II. But first, some music. Here is Kaski from Somalia with Dika.
Thank you.
From Somalia with Dika.
Well, many of us leave our native countries for various reasons, but those who choose to stay in their adoptive countries send money to assist their families, and some give back to their communities. One is professor and educator Esther Okochukwu of Nigeria. She runs a center in Enugu to help girls without marketable skills. Reporter Esther Gatui has more.
Professor Christiana Okechukwu teaches at Montgomery College in the U.S. state of Maryland. She is a Nigerian working in the U.S., but whose heart is in her native country. She runs the Inuele Center in Enugu to help young girls who leave school without marketable skills. But what motivated her to start the center?
I felt that if I empower one of them, it becomes a multiplying effect. If it's within a family, that family will now start learning from one of them. Like the girl that's now a chemical engineer, she's been able to influence her other sisters to also toe the line and go to school.
Widowed early, she was left with three young children whose future she often worried about. She hoped if anything happened to her, others would step up and give her children an education. That worry was her wake-up call, which started the ball rolling.
When you have gotten your own skill, so that one, they are not forced to get into marriage just too early and face violence against women. And I will tell you, the girls that started it, some of them now are chemical engineers.
At the Inuele Center, her focus has been on young girls, but young men are also showing up asking for training. She now holds what she calls yearly boot camps that last a month, where young people learn various skills that transform their lives.
We teach them horticulture, we teach them folktales, we teach. It's an intensive 1 month. They go through that 1 month, they're never the same again.
Okechukwu has a piece of advice for Africans living overseas who very often send money through MoneyGram or Western Union to their families back home.
These are material things that we fade. Any clothes you buy this year, by next 2 years, is out of fashion. But then if you help these children to have education, then they will be able to buy their own clothes.
Professor Okechukwu has also written several books and refers to her Inwale Center as Little America, that she has taken back to the village in Nigeria, where time is utilized the way it should and where teachers and students are held accountable.
If you help these children to have education, even an armed robber cannot take it from your brain.
And through the Inwale Center, Professor Okechukwu is building her community in her birth country of Nigeria and wants other Africans living abroad to make a difference by giving back as well.
That was reporter Esther Gatui reporting from Washington.
Two distinguished Americans who made their mark in World War II recently came to New York. Former Tuskegee Airman Roscoe Brown and pilot and television producer Norman Lear. Their meeting in New York is not the first time their lives have crossed. Bernard Chusman reports.
A bombing raid over Germany. Alongside the bombers were fighter escorts that allowed the mission to be a success. This World War II scene had become routine for two very accomplished 93-year-old men.
I see the guy with the cap on. So.
Acclaimed TV writer Norman Lear was the gunner on a B-17 for 52 combat missions over Germany. His protector, then fighter pilot, now educator, Roscoe Brown, was one of the original Tuskegee Airmen, the popular name for a group of African-American military pilots who fought in World War II.
And made the world better.
They had never met before, but seemed like lifelong friends. Brown said he had escorted Lear's bombing group on a raid over Berlin and knocked a much faster German jet out of the sky.
As I got close to Berlin, I saw this jet streaking up. And that's when I said, drop your fuel tanks and follow me. And the jets were coming up here. I was up here. I turned down, came down under the bombers, turned into the jet, into his blind spot, used my K-14 gun sight, which was an electronic gun sight that put a circle around the target. Hit the trigger, boom, blew up the jet.
Lear said the mission took 16 hours from Italy to Berlin and then back to Italy. It was considered the longest mission in the European theater of war.
A reasonable amount of fighters and flak, and that's why there's more than a reasonable amount of gratitude for the Tuskegee guys who flew our escorts so often.
Brown says the Tuskegee Airmen's role in World War II shattered myths about black Americans.
The stereotype was that African Americans didn't have the intelligence, the courage, the leadership ability to fly airplanes and be fighter pilots. And we certainly destroyed that myth.
Lear, creator of numerous iconic American television shows, was visibly moved to be finally meeting a man who may have saved his and his crew's lives many times over.
He was our escort, which is to say he was our lifesaver in cases, flying to protect the bombers, and that we would meet 70 years later.
Bernard Chessman, VOA News, New York.
This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz. Tune in to Africa News Tonight at 16 and 18 hours UTC, Monday through Friday. And with that, we wrap up this edition of Africa News Tonight. Up next, our VOA editorial. I'm Yehiz Ruhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. And on behalf of our Africa News Tonight producer Bill Workinger and our engineer Nick Ivanoff, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The Millennium Challenge Corporation, or MCC, celebrated the close of its compact program with the government of Senegal in Dakar on November 19th. During a national results forum presided over by U.S. Ambassador to Senegal James Zumwalt and Diaturu Ndiaye, Chief of Staff to the Prime Minister. The $540 million MCC compact, signed in 2009 by the governments of the United States and Senegal, aimed to reduce poverty and increase economic growth by unlocking the country's agricultural productivity and expanding access to markets and services. The two primary compact projects, roads rehabilitation and irrigation and water resource management, made strategic investments in the road network and essential irrigation schemes focused in Casamance region and the Senegal River Valley. The Senegal Compact is a strong example of MCC's inclusive approach to development, building infrastructure that is designed to spur market economic activity and increase incomes of targeted beneficiaries, and establish supporting policy and administrative systems to lock in results. Through the Senegal Compact, MCC financed the construction or rehabilitation of large-scale irrigation systems with 245 kilometers of canals covering over 38,000 hectares. The compact also created a 450-hectare irrigated perimeter that will help farmers grow more rice, fruits, and vegetables. Importantly, MCC awarded more than 8,600 land use certificates covering over 15,200 hectares and incorporated more than 10,000 new plots into the count. The compact also rehabilitated two critical road corridors, including construction and improvement to two major bridges and many markets in the country's north and south. MCC estimates that over the next 20 years, more than 1.5 million Senegalese will increase their household incomes by $720 million as a result of the compact. In his address at the Results Forum, Ambassador Zumwalt cited numerous accomplishments of the five-year program, concluding that thanks to these investments, Senegalese will have access to better household incomes. And with this access, I have faith that they can afford better living conditions for themselves and their families, now and in the future. It is a great honor for the U.S. government to contribute to this remarkable evolution that will increase economic access to those who need it most.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Next, on Straight Talk Africa, Pope Francis travels to Africa. Making his first trip to the continent, the pontiff will visit Kenya, Uganda, and the Central African Republic in a pilgrimage that will bring him face to face with Islamic extremism and Christian-Muslim violence. Join host Shaka Sali and his guests as they discuss the significance of the Pope's mission next Wednesday at 18:30 UTC on VOA Africa.
When news is happening, VOA Africa is there.
Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
Victor Beatty, VOA News, Washington.
Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
For VOA News, I am Charlton Doki in Joba.
Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
VOA correspondents take you right to the center of events as they're happening. And this is where you hear it all on VOA Africa.